Well, I think memory loss is usually the first thing that you notice. So not knowing what day it is and forgetting routine tasks and also irrational behaviour, not responding in the ways that you would expect, and maybe being a bit paranoid. So those are early symptoms of dementia that many people note, and those were the things that we certainly noticed with my father, who was the first to become unwell.
And I guess because of, you know, him having been a writer and having, was it more noticeable that, you know, he wasn't responding to things the way that you would have expected someone with that ability to?
Yes, and I think he was quite good at covering up deficiencies, and he was often quite silent, so we weren't sure what was going on, but occasionally there'd be, yeah, lapses in judgment, and we would think, oh, something's wrong here. He did joke when he had been diagnosed that it was actually making him a better writer, and his neurologist thought that there was maybe some virtue in that claim because he was able to, I guess, dedicate himself completely to the task of writing his memoirs and wasn't sort of bothered by extraneous things so much. But he was kind of letting go of the daily tasks that he had to do and kind of focusing on the writing because he wasn't able to perform the daily tasks anymore.
So what was the effect on, I guess, on him and also other family members of the diagnosis that it was Alzheimer's?
I suppose that was devastating, but it was also good to know what it was. Actually, as it turned out, it wasn't Alzheimer's. It was a related dementia, but we didn't discover this until after he had a post-mortem. But he actually had Lewy bodies dementia, which is actually quite a common one, and it masquerades as Alzheimer's, but it has traits of Alzheimer's and Parkinson's rolled into one. So it was devastating for us, but also it was good to know that we had something to call it. You know, there's a cluster of symptoms without a name before that.
In your experience, was it a sort of a gradual decline, or were there distinct kind of step downs and stages as it progressed?
Yeah, I think it's sort of gradual at times and then seems quite fast at other times. So there'll be times of plateau where not much is happening, and then there'll be a seeming steep decline. And also then there's moments where the person seems to be improving, but then they go backwards again. So that can be a little disconcerting. And particularly when you're living at a distance, as I am, living in Australia, those declines can seem more noticeable when you haven't seen the person for a while.
So you'd go for reasonable periods without seeing him and things would have changed?
That's right, yes. For example, when he went into a rest home, which was in 2000, in Taumarunui, where my brother lives, who my brother would go and visit him twice a day. So he was a carer living next door, you might say. I remember the first time I visited him in the rest home after not seeing him for a few months, and I was very shocked at his decline because he'd been taken off a medication, Aricept, which had been helping him for quite a long time before that, and I just noticed that it was a huge difference. So that was probably the starkest change that I'd registered.
Was it hard for various members of the family? I guess all your situations were different. You were out of the country. Was it hard for various members of the family to kind of deal with it equally?
I think so, yeah, and everyone has their own coping strategies. I was thinking about that this morning, preparing for this interview, thinking about how everybody dealt with it differently. Like my sister and I were very vocal about it, like we wanted to talk about it a lot, and a couple of my brothers wanted to talk about it less. That's hard within a family. You have to realise that everybody cares, but they show it in different ways. And we had to have a number of negotiations about my father's care, usually by email, and, you know, sometimes people would not want to contribute to the conversation, and that would be frustrating, but, you know, we all have different ways of coping with that situation.
And have you had the opportunity to find out whether that's a common sort of occurrence in other family groups going through the same thing?
Yes, just from the conversations that I've had with other people, that seems to be quite common. Yeah. Often, you know, some members of the family don't want to believe that the diagnosis is real for a long time. Certainly that was the case in our family. Like, if you don't believe it, then it's not true, you know, that you can put off the inevitable if you refuse to acknowledge it. Yeah. For me, it was really good to talk about it with my sister. That certainly helped me a lot. But for others, you know, they might just want to think about it on their own and not talk about it.
Your mother and father who'd parted and separated, got back together, was that because of the need for caring?
Yes. I think my mother really felt that she would like to do the right thing, as she put it. So they broke up when I was very young, I think before I was two, and got together when I was 28, so it's quite a big gap. And I was very surprised. So my father's fourth marriage ended, and he was alone, and he started seeing my mother again, seeing more of her and talking about me, I think, and then they decided to move in together, or at least my mother moved in with my father and looked after him for a few years before the task became too hard and he needed to be moved into care.
I mean, it's quite a remarkable thing to do, really, knowing the role that you're then taking on at that stage.
That's right. And it was a really big strain for her, but I think if she was given the option to do it again, she probably still would.
And at what time did your mother then become ill also with dementia? Was that during that time of caring?
I think it was, even though she wasn't diagnosed until a couple of years after he had moved into care. I certainly saw the signs of it, and that was probably maybe accelerated through the pressures of the task of carer, because she had to do a lot of things for him and cover up for him in social situations, and, you know, physically it's quite a grueling task to looking after someone with advanced dementia. So I really feel like, you know, her health suffered as a result, and that's quite a tragic thing.
For her, having, you know, cared for your father, how did she then cope with knowing that perhaps the same thing was then ahead of her?
Well, I think that was really very difficult for her. She wrote me a lot of letters about that. She was really terrified about what was going to happen. But I find now that she's in quite a happy place. She's still very sociable and very good to converse with, but she doesn't have the same anxiety about the end point. And I think when she was struggling with that, knowing what the end point is, she consoled herself with the knowledge that when she got there, she wouldn't know that it was happening. So, that was one way of thinking about it for her.
Mm. So for family members who are, you know, physically close, you know, living, say, in the same neighbourhood or so on, I guess it's easy for them to work out how they can help with caring. How did you work out sort of what your role could be, you know, when you're living at a distance?
It is very difficult living in a distance, and I know a number of people in the same situation. Coping with your guilt is probably the hardest part. But for me, I just commit to going to spend quality time with Mum about four times a year. So I'll go for a week and just spend every day with her. I can't spend very long with her because she gets tired, but, you know, up to 2 hours. And just making sure her material needs are coped with. So, you know, making sure there's enough money and clothes and that sort of thing. And I send care parcels regularly with, you know, chocolate and reading materials and that sort of thing. And I think that's probably the most kind of consistent, regular thing that I can do for her from a distance.
I suppose that's the sort of thing parents are normally accustomed to being the ones to do that, to you know, send to their children when they're away.
That's right. And my mother jokes that when I was at boarding school, she used to send me care parcels, and now I'm doing the same for her. So she recognises the irony of the situation, that the tables have turned.
And that seems to be, you know, quite an effective way for her, you know, feeling that you're still thinking of her and aware of her needs and so on.
That's right, yep, because I can ring every day, which I don't. I ring once a week, but she forgets that I've rung, whereas if I send other things, physical things, she finds evidence of them around her room, so she finds the letters and gets pleasure out of reading them again and putting them up on her wall and so on.
For the experience that you and the other family members have been through, how has it changed, I guess, the way you look at things, having been through, particularly in your case, twice now, parents with dementia?
I think it really helped me let go of the expectations I had of my parents. You know, when you're a teenager and possibly in your early 20s, you're still wrestling with your parents or your idea of your parents, and you have certain expectations or grudges against them. It's certainly in my case, I can't speak for everyone, but knowing that my parents were ill allowed me to get rid of all that baggage and to just enjoy the time that I have with them. So without wanting to sound cliched, to appreciate that your time is precious and not to hold on to things from the past and to recognise that they're there, but to move on and try and enjoy their company while they're around.
So it really sort of brings the relationship back to basics, to use another cliche, if you like.
That's right, yeah. And I find with the time that I spend with my mother now, I'm just really free and easy. I don't expect anything of her, and if we have a good time, that's a real bonus. So I'm not trying to manage the situation in the way that maybe I would have done in the past. So it's helped me to kind of chill out, if you like.
Have you had the feeling that both of them are kind of accept the various things that family can do for them in their situations? Or is there often expectation that more should be done?
I think in the early stages of dementia, people are often really unreasonable and can be quite paranoid and difficult to be around, and that's probably the hardest part, I think. I certainly wouldn't want to live through that time again, because at that stage, dementia patients are incredibly needy, in my experience, and you just can't do anything right. You can't do enough for them, but they're really angry at you anyway. So I think it's easier to help in the later stages when you can just be there to enjoy their company or, you know, offer material assistance, because in the early stages you can't do much to make them feel better.
And does humour have a place, you know, for either the sufferer or the carer in helping getting through things?
Oh, yes, I think that's absolutely indispensable. I'm so grateful that my mother's sense of humour remains intact. Like, we can have a really good laugh about absurd things. That makes it all easier. And the rest home that my mother's in has really great staff who are all quite light-hearted and very tolerant, and I think that breeds an atmosphere of conviviality, which is important.